Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. For the next hour, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. We'll open the phone lines for your questions in just a moment. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills.
Okay, everyone who has done something that you believe in hindsight was totally stupid, raise your hand. Well, I see I'm in good company. I'm not talking just sin here. I don't mean doing something that caused you or someone to abandon God. No, I'm talking just plain dumb, something that you later regretted because you should have known better, didn't think it through, or simply were too lazy to do what you discovered was the right thing to do. For many, being a failure-prone human being is just part of life, and they excuse themselves their occasional foibles with a shrug and a laugh. But for many others, living with past mistakes is a heavy burden to bear. They can't seem to get past it. Today we talk about life after blowing it and how to rebuild self-esteem after you've taken a dip in the river of fools. Dr. Jennings, let's begin with some common what-was-I-thinking situations. How would you respond to someone who says, my job is the absolute pits. I was such a fool to accept this position. I just can't live with myself for being so dumb.
Oh, change it. Get a new job. I mean, seriously, decisions like that, and we've all... What I say to people who struggle with decisions, and the worst decision really is the no decision almost always. Worst decision is to stand in ambivalence, afraid to make a choice, therefore you never go anywhere. When we make a choice that is wrong but not sinful, like, oh, I chose the wrong career path, chose the wrong class at school, chose the wrong major, chose the wrong job, the beauty about making those wrong decisions are, if you're unsure before you make it, and then you make it and you realize, hey, now that I'm in this job, oh, this is not right for me. I can't stand this job at all. Then you have new information, new data, new evidence to make new decisions upon, and you can change those decisions. You can get a new job. You can take a new career path. You can go back to school. I mean, we are rarely are we locked in to a career path, at least in North America, where we don't have options to move in a different direction.
But then what if the person comes back and says, well, Dr. Jennings, you know, I blew it once. I made this stupid mistake. How do I know I'm not going to make the same mistake if I were to uproot my family and uproot myself from this job and go someplace else? I'm going to make the same mistake again. I'm frozen in fear of what I've done in the past.
Yeah, I think that you'd have to look at the two things going on. One is the each individual circumstance of, you know, what were the factors in making the decision in the first place, and what are the factors in making the decision now, and the overall pattern of decision-making the person has. Sometimes people have a motivation that underlines their decision-making, which is the problem. They have faulty decision-making, and you can explore that and guide through that, but then it's not the career that was the mistake. It was the actual methodology and decision-making that was the mistake.
If we look at it from that standpoint, it does open a few more doors, certainly. Of course, what we're talking about here a lot when you don't want to change the mistakes you've made is fear, and you talk about fear a lot on this program. We are afraid of doing the same thing again. We're afraid that we haven't grown enough to make the correct decisions. Is it okay, and this is a lot of people are going to ask this, is it okay for me to just keep making mistakes till I get it right? Is that normal, or am I just being too weird if I'm that kind of person?
Actually, God brings us in our lives to opportunities to make healthy decisions, to overcome, to grow, to mature, to gain experience. And it is His will that we learn how to make healthy decisions. And so He will allow us to find ourselves in similar circumstances again and again so that we can finally learn how to make a healthier choice than we've made in the past. And so until we get a victory over some area in our life, we will find ourselves repeating that problem in our life until we learn from the experience and learn to go in a different direction.
Is God really that interested in the minutia of our lives to help us with problems that small? That when you look at the universe, if you look at the stars colliding with each other, compared to the fact that I hate my job, what's God got to do with me and my job? He's got more important things to think about, right?
It's not the job that he's concerned about. It's the person in the job that he's concerned about. It's the person's development, character, health, well-being, mindset, restoring in that individual a Christ-like mind, heart, character, where they have well-being and peace, removing the distress. And so it's not the job that he's concerned about. It's the person in the job. So yes, he's very concerned. And he will lead and guide and helping us learn from mistakes. What I tell my patients is the mature and the immature are not separated by, well, the mature don't make mistakes and the immature make all the mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. The difference between the mature and the immature is that the mature, when they make mistakes, have the ability to step back and learn from the experience, to gather data so that they can incorporate that experience to make better and healthy decisions so they're not destined to repeat this over and over again. And if there's mistakes where were harmful, they take ownership over those mistakes and the injuries they caused and take responsibility to the best they can fix it. The immature are those who don't take responsibility, blame other people, make excuses, never learn, and continue to repeat the same mistakes over and over again.
We could not have this discussion without talking about something you've talked about from time to time, and that is those of us who tend to be perfectionists. You have a lot to say about those of us who are that way. We want to do it right the first time. We don't want to make mistakes. When we make mistakes, we just really beat ourselves up. How do we stop being perfectionists yet still like ourselves for being not so perfect?
Well, perfectionism comes from a major flaw in the way one sees themselves. Perfectionism comes as a way of defending oneself against the reality that you know you're not perfect. You know you're not perfect. And you fear rejection. You fear abandonment. You fear failure. You fear what people will think of you. You fear a condemnation from God. And it's all this fear that drives one to have to be perfect, lest some negative consequence come upon you. The reality is, and when the truth comes into bear, that we accept ourselves as, hey, the reality is, I'm not perfect. I wasn't born perfect. I was born in sin, conceived in iniquity. It's not possible for me to go through life on earth without making mistakes. So what's the healthy approach? Hey, my goal is not to never make a mistake. My goal is to do the best I can to reduce the likelihood of making a mistake. But when one comes, I accept the reality that I'm not omniscient. I can't be all places at all times. I can't comprehend all circumstances in every minute detail. So there are going to be times that in the doing the best that I possibly can, mistakes are still going to be made. In those times, what can I learn from it so that I can grow, advance, mature, and be less likely to make the same mistakes in the future? So do I want to be a person who never makes mistakes, or do I want to be a person who can grow, who can mature, who can advance, who can learn from life's experience? And we change from being perfect to being a learner who learns and grows over time.
I like that. I'm writing it down, to be a learner. Those of us who are perfectionists, and I just have to admit that I'm kind of in that groove. I like to do things just right, and I don't like it when I do things wrong. But if you say, okay, instead of being a perfectionist, I can become a learner, I like that, Dr. Jennings. I can accept that about myself because I do like to learn. Our phone lines are open right now for this important topic. Friend, if you have done something that you thought was the stupidest thing you've ever done in your life and you just cannot get over it, we have some help for you today. We'd like to talk to you, and Dr. Jennings would like to lead you past that into a lot better feelings about yourself, a little more self-esteem. Here's the phone number to call, 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-4673. Dr. Jennings has been kind enough to give us a book, his latest, Could It Be This Simple? A Biblical Model for the Healing of the Mind. We have one copy, and we'll take a drawing at the end of the program from our callers to see who receives this wonderful, wonderful book. Could It Be This Simple? 800-775-4673. When we come back, what if the mistake we think we made is unchangeable because we happen to be married to it? Stay tuned.
Here's Dr. James Markham with your daily heartbeat. Many people today are interested in probiotics. Well, what does this word probiotics mean? Well, this just helps our bowel flora get back to the way it should be. You know, sometimes when you eat the wrong foods or transit time in the gut is prolonged, we have the bad enzymes or chemicals go higher than the low ones. Well, probiotics are special formulations of literally bacteria, which helps balance things out and keep our systems in a good situation where one bacteria doesn't overwhelm the other. You're going to hear a lot about probiotics, but rather than take lots of probiotics, let's get back to the biblical plan of eating lots of fruits, vegetables, nuts, and grains and keeping good bowel function. Therefore, you won't need to take a lot of probiotics.
If you'd like more information, go to heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Hi, kids. This is Jared. My daddy works here at Life Talk Radio. He asked me to talk to you for a minute about the adventures of the Holy Bible and to tell you how great they are. Each Bible study is full of puzzles and other activities to help you learn more about Jesus. Then every time you finish four lessons, they send you a free cassette tape from your story hour. My sisters and I really like listening to these stories. When you finish all the lessons, there's 54. You'll get a free holder for all the tapes. The best part of all is it's free. That will probably be your parents' favorite part, too. So, to start taking the adventures in the Holy Bible, all you have to do is call Life Talk Radio, 1-800-775-HOPE. Thanks, I know you'll enjoy them.
Welcome back to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. My name is Charles Mills. I have in my hand a book. Could it be this simple? We're going to have a drawing at the end of the program from our callers, from amongst our callers at 800-775-4673. If you'd like to be put into that drawing, give us a call, bring your question to the air, and we'll add your name to the hat. Well, I've learned something good already on this program, that for us perfectionists who are having a hard time with ourselves when we aren't as perfect as we want to be, if we just categorize ourselves as learners, learners are someone who learns from his mistakes or her mistakes, and that's very helpful, Dr. Jennings. Now, before the break, I mentioned this. You talked about if I was in a job I didn't like, you know, how stupid of me to take this job. You say, well, change it. Okay. What if there's someone listening right now who says, how stupid of me to choose the wife I chose? What was I thinking?
Or husband.
How my life turned it out. Or husband. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Or husband. What do you say to that person?
Change it.
Change your wife or your husband? Dr. Jennings.
Yes.
We're not changing our spouses because we think we made a mistake, are we?
It depends on the circumstance, doesn't it? I had a patient whose husband cheated on her for the sixth time when she came to see me. And he kept cheating on her over and over again. He kept telling her he loved her, but he kept cheating over and over again. And her pastor kept telling her, well, to forgive and take him back and forgive and take him back. But she was getting demoralized and destroyed in this relationship. Now, it was a mistake. The marriage was a mistake. What should she do? Should she continue to take him back and let him continue to carouse around and mistreat her? I have other patients whose husbands beat them severely. Broken bones, battered women. I mean, what should they do? Should they just continue to roll over and be doormats? Or should they... The husbands won't do anything to remedy their own flaws and defects of character. They are oppressive. They are exploitive. They're domineering. They're destructive. Is the wife responsible to stay and allow herself to be destroyed, or does she have a responsibility to God to present herself to God in the greatest in the best condition for the greatest use in His cause possible? The first of all the commandments, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself, is the second commandment. And a spouse is not God. It's the closest neighbor. So our duty is always to God first, and God wants us to keep ourselves in the healthiest condition possible. And so if we're in a marriage circumstance in which our individuality, our usefulness in God's cause is being destroyed by a completely out of control, destructive spouse, we have a responsibility to extricate ourselves from that situation.
Well, we are going to talk more about this, but first let's get to our phone lines right now at 800-775-4673. Sam from North Carolina has a comment for us. Sam, what's on your heart today?
Oh, what's on my heart is, Dr. Jenny, you're so wonderful. I got your book last week when I called in Tuesday and got your book. Uh-huh. Could it be this simple? Oh, man, you are brilliant. You are God-blessed.
Thank you.
Oh, we appreciate that, Sam.
Did you have a question for us today, Sam?
Well, no, but I just wanted to comment that I'm about to publish a book. I'm on the verge of publishing it now, and it's called Pennies from Heaven, How God Directed Me All My Life and Led Me to Be an Artist and a Poet, and it's a combination of my art and poetry over 50 years.
Well, Sam, how you're a creative kind of guy, Sam.
I want to send you an autographed copy of my book.
Well, that's a very nice thing, Sam. We appreciate that. But as long as it got you on the line, let's talk about you just for a moment, Sam. You're a creative person, and creative people tend to have a hard time making mistakes. How do you, Sam, overcome the mistakes that you make in the past? Now, I'm not talking about sins. I'm just talking about dumb, stupid things that you've done.
You sit up, and you listen, and you talk to God. And then that's how you overcome those mistakes. You say, oh, please forgive me, Lord Jesus. I made a mistake. But from then on, don't make that mistake again.
Okay. Sounds like good wisdom. Let's learn from
our good wisdom.
Learn from our experiences so that we're not destined to repeat them again. Same thing if you just take a basic example when you're in school doing math and you make a mistake on a math problem and get it wrong. Do you study the mistake so you realize what you did wrong so you can correct it and not continue to make it?
That's correct.
That's what we do.
Dr. Jenny.
All right. Well, that's Sam, correct. We appreciate that. Sam,
once you learn, you just learn. And life is a long life journey of making mistakes, just like you talked about. And yes, we're going to make mistakes. But let's learn from them.
Thank you for calling, Sam.
Okay.
Thank you, Sam.
Take care.
Appreciate that.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate that. I guess I don't need to put him in the drawing. He already has your book. He got it from last week. Well, good for him. Could It Be This Simple is the name of the book, A Biblical Model for Healing of the Mind. And you just heard Sam. Boy, that was nice. We should put him on our marketing team. Sam in North Carolina likes the book, and listener, you will too. Here's the number to call to be in the drawing for the book, 800-775-4673. We do ask that you come on the air and ask us your question or comment on this subject. And the subject is living with past mistakes. Dr. Jennings, I don't want to get into a show about marriage and divorce, so it's easy to tumble into that. But let me just add one more element to this thing. I can see in a spouse leaving another spouse because of the physical abuse or the mental abuse or whatever abuse you want to put into this thing. What if you simply fall out of love? You think, oh, that was a mistake. I should not have married this person because, you know, I don't love that person anymore. And if it had been the right person, I would still be loving that person. What do you say to that, people?
Well, then the mistake isn't in the person you married. The mistake's in how you're interacting and dealing with them. If you've lost love in your heart for a person, then that shows a problem in your heart, not a problem in the other person. From the abundance of the heart,
even though you probably be blaming that person. That person's not what I want him to be or what I want her to be. You're blaming that person, but the problem really is within you.
If we lose love in our hearts for people, they're showing that some problem is going on in us. Now, in the examples I gave, the person whose husband is cheating on her can still love her husband in her heart, love him, and want his wellness, want his redemption, want his repentance, want his restoration, have nothing but goodwill in her heart for this man, but recognizes by staying with him in such a condition, with him ongoing, running around, that her staying gives tacit approval and endorsement to his behavior and colludes with his self-destruction. By setting the boundary and saying, no more, thus far and no further, and filing for divorce, it sends the message that this behavior is unacceptable and can be quite redemptive in his life. It might bring him to the point of repentance. And so you can file divorce for the reasons of loving the other person. You don't have to fall out of love to do that. And so when somebody says that they no longer love the person anymore, that to me is a sign of a hardness of the heart of the person who says it. Regardless of what the other person has done, even the person who's being mistreated or abused, if you love that other person, you don't go along with the mistreatment. You don't surrender to it, because you recognize when that person mistreats you, when that person curses you or says ugly things to you or hits you or threatens you, you recognize that they cannot take that action against you without hardening their heart, without searing their conscience, without warping their reason, without damaging their mind. And all such behavior carried out by the perpetrator moves them further and further away from God's design for their character. And so if you love that person, you can recognize, whoa, I can't stand by idly and just surrender to this type of treatment, because it's destroying their soul and unfitting them for heaven. And so you can stand up and say, because I love you, it's time to separate. It's time to, I've come to you. I've told you this is unacceptable. You continue to treat me this way. I love you too much to go along with this. I'm filing for divorce. I'm not going to be part of the process that allows you to think this is okay.
You know, I've often heard the phrase in Exodus of the Lord hardening Pharaoh's heart. I think you're sort of talking about this, aren't you?
Well, there's no question the phrase "the Lord hardens Pharaoh's heart." If you actually look up all the phrases in the Scripture about that, you'll probably find around 15 to 20 that talk about it, and about a third of them say God hardened Pharaoh's heart. About a third say Pharaoh hardened his own heart. And about a third say Pharaoh's heart was hardened. And so it says it three different ways. Now, how we understand that? Well, the way God, it says in Revelation that the Lord stands at the door and knocks. Anyone opens the door, he will come in and sup with him and he with us. And the door he's talking about is the door to the heart. What does the door knock? What does the Lord knock on the door of our heart with? He doesn't use a fist. What's he knock on the door of the heart? It's with truth. And we've all the listeners listening right now, think about your life history. Haven't you had times when some truth was presented to you and convicted you and your heart was being knocked upon? And you knew you had to make a decision. You either accept this truth or you reject this truth. If you reject the truth that you've been convicted upon, what happens to your heart? It gets hardened. And so this is what was happening. This is what was happening. God hardened Pharaoh's heart because God presented more truth to Pharaoh than any other pagan ruler in ancient times. Every one of those plagues of Egypt was a demonstration that the gods of Egypt were impotent. That's what the plagues were all about. Every plague was a direct attack on one of the gods of Egypt that Pharaoh worshipped. So over and over again, God was showing, these gods are nothing. I am the true God. Pharaoh's heart became convicted. The truth was knocking on his door. He relented, and then after the plague was stayed, he hardened his heart against God again. So how God hardened Pharaoh's heart was by presenting truth upon which Pharaoh had to make a decision. Pharaoh decided to reject the truth, and that hardened his heart.
Oh my, I am sure that there are listeners right now who are saying, yep, that's what happened to me when I heard the truth about God, when I read the Bible. I heard these things, and I just had to fight against them. I hardened my own heart over these things. Well, listener, it's time to stop doing that, okay? It's time to soften the heart and open it to the truth. And I hope that we're providing you with this program week after week for some truth into your heart, because we want that heart to be soft and pliable, that God can shape into the person that he wants you to be, and I know that you want to be also. 800-775-4673. By the way, we'll take a short break coming up here. When we come back, we're going to continue on with something I think that may touch a chord in many hearts. But first, I want to remind you that there is a website you can go to, www.comeandreason.com, where you can hear some of our past programs, and you can get some resources available to help you as you search for truth that Dr. Jennings has so wonderfully put out there for you to enjoy. Comeandreason.com. When we come back, what do we do when we look back on our life and realize that our dumb mistakes have destroyed our health? What do we do then? Let's find out on our return. Stay tuned.
Did you realize that when we don't pray, it's a sin against God? 1 Samuel 12 says, "Far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord by ceasing to pray for you." When we don't pray, it's direct disobedience to the Word of God. 1 Thessalonians 5 says, "Pray without ceasing." And when we don't pray, we're vulnerable. Matthew 26 says, "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation." When we don't pray, we're powerless. It limits our relationship with God. It hinders us from knowing His will, His priorities, and His direction. When we don't pray, we rely on what we can do instead of what He can do. When we don't pray, we're showing pride, self-sufficiency, and lack of discipline. When we don't pray, it leaves us weak, harried, and hassled. So, why don't we pray? Let's say with the disciples, "Lord, teach us to pray." With Seeking Him, I'm Nancy Lee DeMoss.
His first pictures were supposed to be in his mother's arms. His first months were supposed to be at home. His first years weren't supposed to be such a worry. It's no one's fault. We did everything right. But still, our son was born 3 months premature, and no one knows why.
More than 460,000 babies are born premature each year, before 37 weeks of pregnancy. That's 1 in 8 of all births. Nearly half the time, there is no known cause. Many are born so soon and so small, they face serious lifelong health problems. Others don't survive the first year. Please support March of Dimes research so we can learn more about the causes of premature birth and how to prevent it. Visit marchofdimes.com or call 1-888-966-3222.
I just wish someone could tell me why.
Premature birth. The answers can't come soon enough.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings.
Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Dr. Jennings and I were talking about living with past mistakes. Actually, he's talking and I'm listening and enjoying it very, very much, as I'm sure you are, listener. We have a copy of his book, Could It Be This Simple? A Biblical Model for Healing the Mind. We have that in a drawing at the end of the program for our callers today. We'll choose one, and we hope that you will be included in that. We're talking now about living with past mistakes that have created an illness in ourselves. And Dr. Jennings, I was just looking at some statistics the other day. Three quarters of Americans are overweight. And the awful truth is that the excess fat that we're carrying around has become a negative influence in our health and will continue to do so as long as we have it. I'm reminded of a time I stood at the bedside of a woman who was going through delirium tremors. She was shaking and throwing up and violent, and her liver was about shot and her kidneys were failing. All kinds of bad things were happening. And she looked up at me and she says, "I recognize the fact that this is my fault. I put me here." Dr. Jennings, this woman did not feel very good about herself, and I don't blame her. What would you say if you were standing there holding her hand and she was admitting to you that she put herself in this situation?
Well, first, I want to tell the audience that delirium tremens is also known as DTs, and it occurs for somebody who has been drinking heavily for quite some time, and it's a severe withdrawal state in which a person loses touch with reality, hallucinates, gets confused, and has severe destabilization of their vital signs, heart rate, blood pressure can go out of control, and it can be life-threatening. You can die from DTs in a withdrawal state. So that is what you were describing. And if she said, "Yes, I put myself in this state," what would I say? I would say, "You're right. You did." That's exactly what you
said. Is that going to help her?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What she's looking for at that time, most addicts, their number one defense is denial. "I can handle it. It's not my fault. I did, blah, blah, blah." They deny. So the truth heals in all circumstances, the truth. So if she admits the truth, you want to affirm her. Good for you. I'm so glad to hear you say that. It's a wonderful thing that you're acknowledging, because you are absolutely right. This is self-inflicted. You did this to yourself. Now, when you get well, what do you want to do? Do you want to find yourself like this again next week, next year, next month? Because, you know, you certainly can. You've been drinking for 35 years. Do you want to get into a rehab program now so we can help you get well and keep well? Yep, you're right. You did this. So that's what you say. You don't make any excuses. You absolutely speak the truth. You absolutely do this, and nothing will ever get better until you make choices to go in a different direction with your life.
You know, when you're dealing with an ill person, whether it is self-brought or whether it is, we're talking about self-brought, habits that brought them, there's a diminished capacity going on here. The mind is not as capable as it should be to really understand and recognize the truth when it comes along and falls on your face. How do you help someone see the truth when they really don't have the capacity to fully comprehend it?
That's an interesting question, because part of that capacity that you're talking about is self-imposed as well. Most of the people in those circumstances know the truth already. It's not that they can't comprehend it. They know it, and they have spent years piling up all types of distortions, excuses, misrepresentations, and lies to avoid dealing with the truth. I had a patient that we were talking about before the show started, who was in my hospital because she had to have oxygen at night. And when I asked her about her history, she told me that she smokes a pack and a half to two packs of cigarettes a day. And I said, well, help me understand what's going on here. You're smoking a pack and a half, two packs of cigarettes a day, but you got to use oxygen at night. And she said, oh, the cigarette smoke doesn't have anything to do with why I need oxygen at night. All right, and you see
that's what
the
I'm talking about, diminished capacity. Okay. That woman was not making, she was not crossing those T's there.
There was no diminished capacity here. There was no
really?
Diminished, no, none whatsoever. And I confronted her on it, and she said to me, I know the cigarette smoking causes. I just didn't want to have to admit it. Because admitting it then means she'll be responsible to do something about it, which means she'll have to deal with getting rid of her cigarettes so her lungs won't get worse. But as long as she believes the lie, well, they're not connected. Cigarette smoke doesn't do anything to this. In fact, cigarette smoke helps me breathe better. I breathe so much better when I smoke. Okay? And people do this. They will purposely avoid the truth because they, on some level, know that the truth will require them to make a change that they don't want to make. And if you look at the root to most of these habitual bad decisions that people make, when people, not the occasional, but anybody can get fooled. You know the old saying, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Anybody can get fooled. We are human. We can be deceived. Anybody can be. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about mistakes that are habitual, that are the same pattern of mistakes over and over again. When we look at those types of mistakes, the underlying root tends to be people who allow their emotions or feelings to dictate or lead in their decision-making, rather than using their higher cortical functions of good reason and judgment to lead out in their decision-making. And if you look at that, and those who are listening right now, just look back on the five mistakes that you've made in your life that you regret the most, the five things that God said, hey, I'm going to let you go back and change five things. You'd pick these five. How many of those came because you were following a clear conscience with good judgment, and how many came because you were following your feelings? Feelings are almost always what lead us to make bad mistakes. And what happens is people don't learn how to balance their mind in the right direction and make healthy decisions in spite of how they feel. And it's not a matter of suppressing feelings or ignoring feelings or pretending we don't have feelings. It's a matter of learning how to process our feelings and intelligently apply what we know is healthy in spite of how we feel. That's one of the things in my book that I teach people how their mind was designed and how to make these intelligent decisions in the face of powerful feelings. Of course, the best example we have, I think, in Earth's history is Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he was faced with overwhelming intense feelings, yet he still chose to follow the healthy and right path, even though his feelings tempted him otherwise.
I'm looking here. I think you even have a chart on this thing with feelings and truth. Okay, Dr. Jennings, if we think of our life as a road, and occasionally our road has a fork in it, and one side goes over to feelings and the other direction goes toward truth, can we say simply that during those times when we make mistakes, I mean, when we just think we're doing what we should be doing and we really should know better, it's when we're following our feelings as opposed to following what we know to be true. Is that right?
In the vast majority of the time, that's the case. And it says in James 1 that we are tempted when we're drug away and enticed by our own evil desires or feelings.
Yeah.
But Jesus said the truth will set you free. So the truth leads us to healing. The truth leads to wellness. But when we follow the path of truth, it often goes through a valley of emotional discomfort. For that person you saw with DTs who decided to get into some type of treatment, decided to go through withdrawal and detoxification, that path of wellness, once you've been habituated in some unhealthy pattern of living, to go to wellness will take you through a path of uncomfortable feelings. The physical withdrawal from your substance, nicotine withdrawal if you're going to quit cigarettes. If you have a pattern of being ugly and unkind to people, to your spouse, to your kids, the path of wellness is the path of humility, the path of humbling oneself, the path of asking for forgiveness, the path of sacrificing yourself. And for the person who's been arrogant and proudful, that's going to be an uncomfortable emotional experience to go through. But what comes out the other side is a person who has peace with themselves and peace with those around them.
Okay, now it's easy to make the leap. I mean, you are a medical doctor as well as a psychiatrist, Dr. Jennings, and so you have vast experience in understanding the human body as well as the human mind. When you look around at the world, you're seeing a lot of human bodies that are suffering these days with the obesity rate. Diabetes is out of control, heart disease, some forms of cancer are just crazy because of our chronic lifestyle issues. This living with past mistakes is going to be a tsunami in this society very, very quickly, because the mistakes we're living with right now as we age are only going to get worse. Let's set up some truth here, Dr. Jennings. There's a lot of people standing on that Y in the road, where feelings and appetite and marketing...
They're not standing on the Y in the road. They've already gone down the feelings path. Let's face it. This problem we have in our society is that people basically eat when they feel like eating, and they eat what they feel like eating. They like what they like. It tastes good. It feels good. They enjoy it. That's why they do it. The majority of the people that are suffering with these problems in our society don't make those intelligent choices that reason would dictate is good for their well-being. They will make excuses and say, well, I deserve it. I work hard all week. I should be able to eat what I like. I deserve a few pleasures in life. It's fun to eat this thing, you know, or it's more convenient to stop and get Big Mac and fries or a Whopper or whatever it is, and you pop those things down three times a week, you know. If you make these decisions, the evidence is very clear. You're free to make those decisions, absolutely, but the consequences are going to be direct, and they're going to be devastating over time if you continue to do that day in, day out. And those decisions are not based because the person, even in our society today, thinks, well, you know what, the healthiest thing I could possibly eat is fast food. That's going to be really healthy for me. Chips, candy, and fast food. I'm going to be a healthy person. I don't think anybody thinks that. They all know this is unhealthy food, but they still do it because they like the way it tastes, and it tastes as a feeling. It's an emotional experience. They like what it does when they eat it, and they don't like the taste of certain other foods. The interesting thing is that we know from science that if we change our diet, within usually 3 to 4 weeks of a diet change, your taste buds change, and the new diets that you're eating actually taste good, and the old food doesn't taste good anymore.
That's right. All right. I wrote down the word ownership here. You've talked about it a couple times in this program. If we take ownership of our lives, if we say, okay, I'm going to live the truth, I'm going to let the feelings not rule me, I'm going to take ownership here. Is this one of the major first steps we take toward getting back on the right road, as it were, on this illustration?
Yeah, and the thing we have to take ownership for is responsibility in governance of ourselves. One of the other things that confuses the healthy decision-making is when we allow our feelings to determine what we do based on our perception of what other people think toward us. And so people are feeling, well, you know, people will be mad at me, people won't like me, people reject me, and their feelings of insecurity relationally will lead to many unhealthy decisions, rather than stepping back and say, wait, regardless of what other people think of me, what is truly the healthiest, most reasonable course for me to do with my life at this point in time?
800-775-4673. Dr. Jennings, you are giving such good advice, no one's calling because they want to listen to what you have to say. But I tell you what, I want to give this book away. So here's what I'm going to do, listener. Get your fingers ready. All right. I'm going to give this book away to the third caller right now, 800-775-4673. You don't have to go on the air. You don't have to say a thing, because I don't want you to miss a word of what Dr. Jennings is saying today. But just call right during the break here, 800-775-4673. Caller number three is the winner of Could It Be This Simple? And leave your name, and we'll make sure that we'll give this book to you and tell the world who you are. So here's the number. Dial right now during our break, 800-775-4673. There we go. Don't have to talk. Don't have to do anything, but just be our third caller. We've got two so far. We need one more. Come on in there, guys. 800-775-4673. When we come back, what do we tell someone? There's our third caller from area code 614. What do we tell our person that says, I've lost my children's respect over the way I raised them, but I thought I was doing the best I could. I was working hard. I was traveling. Yes, they should have understood. Stay tuned.
Too many Christians don't know the truth about dinosaurs, but Christian scientist Dr. Elaine Graham Kennedy is out to change that. Dr. Kennedy is a research scientist who has done field work at dig sites in remote places like Patagonia. She has spent her life studying dinosaurs, and now she has published a remarkable book called Dinosaurs, published by Pacific Press, that is both scientifically based and biblically sound. It answers the questions many Christians ask. Did dinosaurs really live? Are dinosaur bones fake? Who made the dinosaurs? What happened to them? And were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark? Dr. Kennedy's book, Dinosaurs, is filled with interesting facts, photographs, and colorful charts. It is a must for every Christian home and perfect for reading with your kids. To get a copy, visit www.pacificpress.com or call 1-800-765-6955.
When I was 16 years old, I was in a craft.
Hi, my name is Regina Grant. I want to introduce you to my friend Emily Jensen. A terrible car accident took away her ability to write, speak, or walk, but it did not take away the power of what she has to say. My friend Emily is a tireless volunteer. Whether she is helping children with disabilities, visiting the elderly, or feeding the homeless, she gives the gift she has to someone else. She doesn't let her personal challenges stop her from helping others. Neither should you. You have talents and abilities. Put them to work for the good of your community. That's right. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
Welcome back to Simple Solutions. I am your host, Charles Mills. We're here with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. We're talking about living with past mistakes, living beyond the time we blow it big time. Al, this is something that I've heard from a lot of fathers who look back over their lives and they've lost the respect of their children because they were working hard, they were traveling a lot, they were providing for their kids. They thought they were doing the right thing, Dr. Jennings, but they realize now that they weren't doing the right things. What they did was lose the respect of kids. What do you tell that dad?
Well, you know, that's too general, honestly, for me, because when they lose the respect of the kids, it could be because they were actually being disrespectful human beings, but it could be because there's some problem with the kids, and they were actually being quite, I mean, just let's take the example of Jesus Christ. We'd all agree he lived perfectly, didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
Did everybody respect him?
Nope.
No, he had a lot of people that really disrespected him, but he didn't do anything wrong. So just because the father or mother have children that don't respect them is not necessarily indicative of the fact that they did something wrong. I would have to have more details. I couldn't take such a general statement and broadcast that and say, well, if your kids disrespect you, it's because you made some mistakes. I just couldn't make that generalization.
Well, this is great because there's a lot of parents out there, probably the majority of them, who are misreading what their kids are saying to them. Would I be safe in saying that, Dr. Jennings?
Well, there's no question. Yes, there's parents that are misreading their kids, and there's kids that are misreading their parents. There's no question about it. That absolutely happens. And one of the things that love does, when we love each other, then we tend to put the best spin the best interpretation on the other person's behavior. We don't jump to conclusions especially of a negative nature towards that person. And when it does appear that something negative is transpiring or meant or happening, then at least as adults, we would want to clarify with the person before we still make a conclusion about that. And then once we're sure of that, as adults, we'd want to try to intercede or intervene in ways that are redemptive and healing rather than retaliatory.
Okay. All right. This is making all kinds of sense. By the way, Gretchen in Ohio, you are our winner of the Could It Be This Simple giveaway book. We have one copy, and Dr. Jennings is going to sign it for you. This is Gretchen from Ohio. We appreciate all of our callers. Boy, the phone lines just sort of blew up when I made that little announcement. We appreciate letting us know that you're out there listening. By the way, listener, if you want more information and if you'd like to let us know that you're enjoying the program, I invite you to head over to Dr. Jennings' website, comeandreason.com, and you can find out how you can learn, how you can get some of these resources we talk about here, including a DVD set. And you can listen to programs. If you like this one, if you're a first-time listener to this program, head on over there. You can listen to programs all the way back to February. We have some fantastic programs that you can sit there and just click on them and listen. They'll stream right to your computer. Or you can download them, listen to your iPod. Just all kinds of good things you can find at www.comeandreason.com. Okay, what I have learned, Dr. Jennings, and my whole idea behind doing this program and hosting is for me to learn things. Because if I know I'm learning things, I know our listeners are learning things too. What I'm learning here is if we look back on our past mistakes and we can't seem to get past them, we're looking at the wrong thing. We need to be looking for the truth in our errors. What we missed, how we missed the mark. We need to become learners. We need to be that truth seeker. Am I on the right track here, Dr. Jones?
Absolutely. Be asking, what lesson can I take from this experience that will make me a more mature, wise, healthier, more intuitive person that I can move forward in God's grace, living a healthier life, despite the fact that I made some mistake in the past? And again, the whole premise of the questions that you've asked and show are not sin. They're just human mistakes.
Right. And that is the cool thing about God, Dr. Jennings. Make the connection here for us of how God deals with our mistakes.
Well, I'm going to just point out it's very likely, I suspect, we'll make mistakes in heaven. No, people don't think that. See, we won't sin in heaven, but we can make mistakes in heaven. And because mistakes are not sin. Mistakes would be, for instance, when we get to heaven and maybe you decide for the first time you're going to, you know, take up piano or harp playing or whatever it might be, and you never played before. Do you really think that there will be no learning to do, that you will instantly have perfect master's ability at every task you take, or there'll be the process of practicing and improving and gaining skill, certainly at a much more rapid ability that we have now, but still, won't there be trial and error? Could you see as a musician, you're maybe creating a new piece of music and you're trying this tune, and then you try it with that particular arrangement of notes, and then till you get the one you really like, are you going to just instantly have it all without ever having to experiment with things? We in the new heaven and earth will not be omniscient. We won't know all things. Only God knows all things. So I think there will be learning throughout all eternity, and learning means that there will be mistakes, but mistakes are not sin.
Oh, I really like that, because as an amateur songwriter, it is the process of writing the song, of trying something and then finding something better and then finding something that's just right, that is the joy. That discovery is the joy of songwriting. And if I thought of heaven as just sitting down and playing perfectly for the first time, that wouldn't be fun at all.
Yeah, and you think about people like, say, Albert Einstein. Let's say he's in heaven with us and he's up there, and we have no reason to believe he won't be. And do you think he will still enjoy studying the cosmos and the science of how God created the universe? And do you think he will still have the joy that comes from struggling with a mathematical equation or problem and then having several different hypotheses out there until he finally gets it right, and then the light goes on and there's that joy of new discovery? Or will there be nothing new to discover in the new earth? I think we're going to have that. I don't think everything will be instantly given to us, but we will have that joy of experience and growth. One person I know would say this: imagine at your new mansion mansion in heaven, you decide that you're going to go out and plant a, you know, a shrub of some kind near the front entrance to your mansion. And after a few years, you go, you know what? That was really a little closer than I wanted it. I'm going to move it a little further away. Is that mistake sin? You see, we can make those types of changes, mistakes, if you will. There's no sin in them at all.
Wow. Wow. Mistakes can be learning experiences if our goal is to know the truth. If a mistake can be a devastating experience if our goal is to feel good about what we have decided, how we have lived, the decision we made. If our goal is to feel good about everything we've ever done, folks, we are going to fall flat on our face. We're going to feel awful about this. But if it says, you know, look what I did 30 years ago. Man, did I blow it on that day. I should have done this, and now I know that. I'm not going to do that again because I know the truth. Dr. Jennings, this is powerful stuff. Wow.
Yeah, and one of the things that we can say as we're winding up the show today is saying that helped me once in my life, pain is inevitable, but misery is optional. See, in this world of sin right now, it is not possible to go through this life without experiencing some type of pain. Physical pain, emotional pain, relational pain, psychological pain. We all experience pain. But vast majority of the painful experiences can be healed. But misery, almost always, in some way, we're choosing it. We're choosing to stay in a situation that we have an option to move out of. But why do we choose to stay in a state of misery? Because the choice to get out of the misery requires a brief period of pain, a brief period of discomfort, a brief period of some suffering that will relieve both the pain and the misery. But we're paralyzed because we're afraid to go through that process of change.
And that brings us right back to the very first thing you said to me on this program today when I gave a little example of what should a person do who is facing a situation that he or she is uncomfortable with. And you just simply said, change it. Change it. Well, friend, that's the message of today that I'm hearing Dr. Jennings saying over and over again on this program. If you don't like what's been going on in your life, folks, change it. If you're not as well as you want to be, change your habits. If you aren't happy with your job, change something about it. Change your situation.
Let me say this. Where the power of change is not changing the world around you. You don't have power to change the world. You have power to change yourself. And so when we implement changes, we're talking about implementing changes over ourselves, either in the actions we take, the habits we engage in, the thoughts we think, the beliefs we hold, how we process the information. We have the ability to change with God's grace in our lives ourselves. But what people get mistaken upon is they use their energy trying to change their spouse, trying to change their kids, trying to change their church, trying to change their... In other words, they try to change the world rather than trying to change themselves.
Wow. Living with Past Mistakes. Fantastic show today, Dr. Jennings. Thank you very, very much. Next week, we're going to continue this discussion on a deeper level, and we're going to talk about seeking balance after sin when we're hiding from God. How do we get back? How does God find us? How do we find God? Oh, good questions for next week right here on Simple Solutions. Again, the website, www.comeandreason.com, for good resources of help to help you with your mental health problems and learning how to build relationships that may have been destroyed, seeking the change that you want to bring into your world. And listeners, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate that. Gretchen, I hope you enjoy the book. And until next week, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Timothy Jennings, inviting you to apply the simple solutions God placed in your heart today. Goodbye, everyone.
Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com.